Hey everyone, this is the She Dares podcast. I'm Mel and I'm your host. Every week we get inspiring women on the show to tell us about difficult moments in their life, pivotal moments, daring challenges. They share their stories to inspire you to keep being daring. So this week's guest is Alba Pardo. She is a dear friend of mine that I met many years ago, I think about 9 years ago, at the Women in Board Sports community event in Switzerland. She is a journalist, action sports photographer, world traveler. She basically lived in her van and traveled the world. Amazing, inspiring woman. Today we talk a little bit about her life over the last 4 years, how she adapted from traveling around the world in her van alone to becoming a mum, changing relationships, changing countries, and now being settled in the north of Sweden, far away from her family and friends. All right, let's get her on the podcast. Hey, Alba, how are you doing? Nice to see you.
I'm okay. I'm good. In the snow, so happy.
Good. And where are you? You're in, how do you pronounce it?
I'm in Åre. This is like the biggest resort in Sweden.
So, of course, you've been following She Dares for a bit, so you know what we're about. The reason that we started this podcast, obviously, was to talk to inspiring women. You are one inspiring woman, very inspiring woman that's been in my life for a long time. And we talk about, obviously, challenging moments in our lives and times where we broke out of our comfort zones. And I know that you definitely have been out of your comfort zone many times before. Is there kind of a specific turning point in your life that you'd like to share with us today?
A turning point in life for me has been, you know, in the recent years, I went from becoming a digital nomad, that's no words, to becoming a wife, a mother, a divorcee, and changing countries. Like I've in a very short period of time, I went from being by myself to becoming a mother. Yeah, that's definitely been a big change or a shifting moment in my life, especially because I ended up 4,000 kilometers with a baby on tow away from everyone else.
When we first met many, many years ago, I knew you as Alba, world traveler, action sports photographer, media guru, snowboard fanatic. I don't even know where your permanent home was at the time.
I didn't have one.
So how has things changed from then to now being a mum?
I think it's very important to say that I'm still the same person. You know, things change, but my person, what I love, what moves me, my passions and what makes me tick and what makes me happy is very similar. And I continue to pursue all of those passions and travel as much as I can and snowboard as much as I can and enjoy the company of the people that I did then or, you know, new ones. So I don't think that has changed a lot. The balance of things has definitely changed. And a lot of the times we forget to say that we're just more than one thing, right? Like, I'm not just a mother. I'm not just a journalist. I'm not just a photographer. I'm not just a snowboarder. I'm all of these things. And it's important that we present ourselves as more than one thing. As women, we tend to kind of scrape bits of us that don't suit at that moment. But it's not easy. It's not an easy thing to do, to show up all the time being all of those things at the same time. Of course not. And there's parts of me that, you know, have to be stronger at moments in time. So yeah, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but but yeah, I, it's still me. And yeah, now I happen to have another buddy of adventurers who's Pia, and she's going to be 4 soon. So yeah, that's a big change, but it's an add-on rather than a complete change or a complete scrape off of everything else.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
What is it like now having a 4-year-old to take on all your adventures with you? What sort of things are you doing?
Okay, so on the logistics standpoint, is definitely a bit more challenging. You just have to plan a bit more in advance. And definitely you look at things that maybe before weren't as important, like stability, economic stability, work, holidays. You know, I used to work 24/7. Like, there wasn't really a break for me. Now, something that I find that it's sacred and I do not want to lose is the weekends with her. You know, she goes to school Monday to Friday. We're on holidays and weekends. I really make sure I don't have to work, and that I can be with her and have that time, not only for her and her well-being, but also for my sanity, because otherwise it's a non-stop. If it's important to have work and life balance when becoming a parent, I think it's even more, because it's not only you anymore, and you kind of have to have those spaces. It is challenging. It's not easy to continue to do, especially, you know, snowboarding and the sports I like, whether it's biking or going on the paddleboard, whatever it is, especially when she was a baby. Now it's becoming a bit easier because she starts to do those things by herself. But of course, you know, it's she's still very young. For me, it's been a road to kind of figure out how to take her with me, because I wanted to share these adventures with her, because I didn't want to stop to do them either. And in my case, that meant I had to take her with me most of the times. Sometimes it's been less than ideal. Sometimes it's been more effort than maybe that bliss moment of enjoyment of the powder run. But you know what? Now I look back and look at the photos and I'm like, yeah, it was worth it. It was hard work. It wasn't easy. Some days, you know, we made it out of the door 100 meters and had to come back. But the next day we try again. And some days it worked better than others, and that's part of it. And, you know, the thing that I've learned is kind of slow down and be present at that moment, not try to kind of go faster than our rhythm allows, because that's when tantrums happen, that's when screaming happens, that's when losing your nerve happens. And the one thing I have learned with Bia, it's that if I'm stressed, if I'm rushing, if I'm for some reason, you know, on my nerves a little bit, she senses that and it just turns into big shit. So the only way to calm down and to go back to a good rhythm is to calm down myself first, and then she calms down with me. And sometimes she goes, "Mama, look at me." Which is very cute, but it's also very scary, because it's like, how did you even learn this? But I guess I taught her, so yeah.
That's really cute, and it's really nice that you have a reminder there, because I think it's all... I mean, it's such a thing in adult life these days. We actually forget to breathe all the time. We're just running constantly. And I can resonate with it a little bit. I mean, I don't have a child myself, but, you know, having a dog, you know, life changes a bit. But you do want to see them having a great time as well. So when we got our dog, we went biking and then realized she was blind. So, you know, she can't run next to the bike sometimes. So, but that's okay. You know, then you just adapt. Talking about adapting and pivotal moments, you mentioned also, you know, starting new relationships, breaking old ones.
Yeah, so of course, it's not only my story to tell, and there's more parts involved to this. Of course, my ex-husband, my new partner, my ex-husband's new partner, our families, our kids, you know, it's not only my story to tell, but what I can tell is my part of it and what it meant for me. And what changes this has been in the relationship, in my motherhood experience, and in my person. We started the separation process when Pia wasn't even one. So she was very young. And we finally started the divorce process when she was just one and a few months. So for her, the memory of, you know, the normal structure, I don't want to say normal, but the mother, father kind of together, and then that family core, the traditional family core, I don't think she has a memory of it, you know. What it meant for me to kind of leave that relationship and then start a new one, it meant that her dad moved back to his country, which is England. We were in Spain, which is where I'm from originally, and then soon after we took on this big chapter in our lives, and we started moving to Sweden with my current partner in a new family. So now I have two teenage stepkids as well that come there with their own family story. So for me and for Pia, what that meant was that, you know, to see family, you have to take planes. To see her dad, she has to take planes. And she's like, yeah, I want to go see dad. Let's go on a train on a plane. I go to see grandparents. Oh, let's go on a train on a plane. And she kind of has grown with that rhythm. I'm sure in the future, you know, I'll have to face questions like, why aren't you with dad? And why we live so far away? And why all of these things? But so far, we're kind of taking it step at a time and enjoying the good perks of it. You know, she has now two older siblings that kind of show her the ropes. And sometimes they fight and sometimes they love each other and sometimes they ignore each other. And you know, that's something that it's new and it's a gift for us and for her. So we embrace that. She's growing in with four languages. I speak Catalan to her, but then we also have, of course, Spanish. She speaks Swedish at school. My partner speaks Swedish to her. Her dad speaks English to her. When we're all together at home, we speak English. So she's a four-year-old, not even, that speaks four languages and understands four languages. And now she's at that point. I mean, she was mixing all of them for a while. It took her longer to start speaking. But now she starts to address different people in different languages, which is mind-blowing to see. So, you know, there's a lot of good things from it. What it meant for me as a mother or as a new mother was that I had to take on most of the upbringing on my own. And then, of course, COVID hit, making, you know, traveling more difficult. In Sweden, the schools were in lockdown, but she wasn't quite there yet because we were in the changing process. So I had my own little lockdown experience where I was working 24/7 with her, 24/7 with zero family support, friends or family around me. So, you know, I've been about 2 years basically working from home with her next to me with very little support. And that was very tough. That was really, really tough. Now that she started school, it's so much easier because it allows me to focus on one thing at a time a bit more. But I've also learned a lot, and we've developed a super close relationship with her, and we're like these best buddies. So that's a good thing as well. And that's what it meant for me, you know, this change of relationships and so on. Of course, it has a lot more layers and a lot more angles that they're not for me to tell. But when it comes to my relationship with Bea and my own story, it's that I've grown to appreciate our closeness and you know, to make the best out of really difficult times.
I mean, there was a lot there. Going back to like what you said, you know, she's speaking four languages, she's excited about getting on a plane and a train. Do you think, you know, that's because obviously starting so young, she almost, it's like a regular occurrence for her, so she doesn't really know anything else, she hasn't really stayed in one place.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, for her, it's her normal, right? So that's, she has no other references. Sure, when she grows up and she sees her friends that they have it differently, but for her, that's her normal, and that's what I'm sticking to. You know, if we pour love into her and the relationship and her upbringing, I don't think it's better or worse. She's just growing, you know, you compare it, and it's really ugly to compare, especially kids, but if you see other kids at school or from the village in Spain or whatever, like, she has already so much more world experience. That can't be bad, right? So yeah, we're sticking to that.
Definitely not. I mean, growing up, you know, you get some kids that are very academically minded. They know a lot of facts about things, and then you get the more streetwise kind of kids, you know. She's definitely going to be, I mean, not to say she's not going to be academic. Of course, she probably will be as well, but she'll definitely have a good streetwise head on her.
Yeah, and I mean, we started to travel with her when, I think her first year, she was in 8 or 9 countries. You know, we took her first flight when she was just a month old to go see the family in the UK. So it's such a joy to travel with her as well. And it's funny because when I was traveling by myself and I was younger, you know, you'd get on a 10-hour flight and you'd see a kid in the front row and you'd be like, oh no, he's going to be screaming all flight and blah, blah. You know, I tend to kind of pull faces and, oh, kids around me, whatever. And now I'm like one of them. And if I see someone pulling a face around me, I get really mad. I'm like, idiot. But then, you know, I've had so many compliments on planes, like, wow, she's so good at traveling, or this or that, she behaved very well. I was like, well, yeah, I mean, it's if you pay attention to them and, you know, you fill their needs and cover their needs, they're like another person there. I mean, it doesn't really make a difference. So, yeah.
It's funny that you mention that because, I mean, I'm not the biggest advocate for children on flights, but I don't have kids. And I know, you know, from a lot of my friends, they have kids and it is hard. And I think that's why it's important to also have this conversation as well, to educate, you know, as well, people like me who are just, I want my peace and quiet. I don't want to have a screaming kid next to me. You as a parent don't want to have a screaming kid next to you, but it's the reality. It's what happens. So, you know, I remember one of the podcast guests, she used to make, before she went on a flight, these little sweet pouches with a little note on it with the kid's name. And it says, I'm really sorry, I'm a little bit grouchy today. So if she was screaming, then the parent would hand out little sweets to everyone on the flight. I mean, this was before COVID, but just to kind of calm any anger or stuff like that.
I've heard of that before. And I think then you're giving people ground to think that you're doing something wrong and you're not. So yeah, he screams, he had a bad day. So what? I've sat next to plenty of annoying people that are adults, full grown adults, next to me and stuck with them for a long flight. Is that more or less annoying than a baby that has tummy ache or ear ache or whatever ache, you know? I don't know. I mean, deal with it. Like, it's a big world and we're all here to share the space together. So yes, of course, I've been young and I've been judgmental with kids and families, but now that I'm not gonna apologize for it, you know? It's what it is. If they scream, they scream, deal with it.
And we all need to be kinder to each other.
Nobody's perfect, so yeah, let's start with ourselves there.
What other things have been going on for you? I mean, you mentioned, you know, your professional life. So can you just give like a little intro into what you're doing now and how that's kind of impacted you?
I am doing a lot of things, actually, because, I mean, I'm a freelancer. I've been a freelancer my whole life, I think. So I work in projects and different clients and so on. But I guess my main clients at the moment are, I guess, the Red Bull Spain channel manager, or write all the content related to snow and bike in Spanish for the RedBull.com channels. I also work with an agency that's like an action sports related agency, and we do content for one of the biggest sports newspaper in Spain, and we have like an action sports vertical there. We also do events and other, you know, media and PR and content creation for other events and clients. Then I also run the marketing and comms and kind of help the general managing of La Poma Bike Park, which is one of the biggest, more renowned bike parks in Europe. And that's a really cool, exciting project because the team's really cool. The place, you've been there, Mel, it's like the mecca for the dirt
it
jumpers.
It is. I want to live next to it.
It's so much fun. Yeah, it's like, I always describe it as Disneyland for grown-ups with bikes and skateboards. So that's really a lot of fun. And I've also taken Pia there and she's had a blast. And, you know, she's got this little style with her little bike. And it's so much fun. And, of course, I'm doing all of this in the distance because I moved to Sweden. So I kind of work from home and travel when I can or I need to. Last summer, it was a big gig that I'm continuing to work with. It's an action sports festival in the north of Spain, in Vigo. It's called Tomarisquiño. And I kind of became the media coordinator. So I was the bridge between, you know, the photographers, the videographers, the social, the sponsorship department, everyone, the streaming. So I directed like a team of 70 people to stream channels and, you know, 10 hours of streaming, live streaming, 5 different World Cups. So it's really exciting. And the festival's growing. We had a bit of a special year because of COVID regulations, but this year it looks like it's going to be a good one. And that's in August, so really excited about that one. And I continue to nurture and help out with the snowboard magazine, SBS Mag, that I founded about almost 10 years ago. And you helped me build the first website from ground up, so that's really exciting. I don't really do the day-to-day for that. I have Chavi that helps me out, but I definitely still look after it and create content when I can and assist him with that. And then my new baby, that it's not really new because it's definitely been in our hearts for...
This is where we met.
The last 10 years, yeah. It started with Women in Board Sports. Yeah, I kind of stumbled on the first event that they organized that they didn't even know what it was about. And you came on board like a couple of years later. And yeah, from there it kind of grew. But then... because it was a volunteer-based kind of project, you know, we all gave our time when we had it, what we could. People move on, they change countries, they have families, they change jobs, and the energy kind of diluted there a little bit. And it was kind of hard to keep pushing towards, you know, this global community of women in the action sports. So that's been in the back of my mind, like, I've met you, I've met some of my best friends there, I've got some of the best work opportunities from those events, from that community, and from those women. So I really wanted to make sure that that kept going and that the community didn't die, and or that it didn't get forgotten, not that it would ever die, but I couldn't find a way or the right path or the formula, or maybe I didn't have the balls or the ovaries or the whatever it took at that moment to do it the way I thought it had to be done. So it's been in the back of my mind for, oh gosh, maybe like since 2016 that we organized the last event in Barcelona. Yeah, and I just launched the platform in November this year, or 2021, so last year already, but a couple months ago. So yeah, we kind of rebranded and relaunched. So Women in Action Sports Network is a community that wants to empower, educate, inspire, and connect women working or interested to be part of the action sports industry. And we're aiming at building, you know, this library of inspirational content. We host monthly workshops together with Justine Mulish. She's an aquactive coach. And then we're obviously looking at organizing in-person events starting this spring when the COVID shit show hopefully dies down a little again. So that is very exciting, and so far the feedback on it, it's been great.
Wow, I am exhausted to hear about all of the things that you do on a day-to-day. I mean, I knew maybe 10% of that. I was going to ask you, you know, what have been some of the hardest things that you've had to deal with, and maybe some of the things that people don't openly talk about.
So I have this friend, she's a sports psychologist, and I haven't seen her for years now, but she has a kid the same age, like they're maybe a few weeks apart from Pia. And we both lived in London around the same time, and she's also Spanish. She's now moved away. But, you know, after almost the first year, we didn't really talk after having the kids, and Monday's like, hey, how are you doing? Like, we kind of follow each other, and we chat now quite often, but it's kind of that you kind of keep an eye, but we don't, you know. And after a year, the first year of having the baby, kind of reach out, hey, how are you doing? I see that, you know, whatever. So, oh, I'm better now. It's like, what do you mean you're better now? It's like, well, after I went through the mourning, is that the right word? When somebody dies, and I'm like, wait, what do you mean? Who died? You know, like... And she's like, no, well, you know, from my old me. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she explained that, you know, when you become a mother, you have to kind of go to this process of mourning your old self to give space to your new self as a mother. It's never going to be you as who you were before having the kid. That person is dead almost, or it is dead as you knew it. And so you kind of have to accept that, go through that somewhat sad process to then accept the new person that was you as a mother. And when she expressed it this way, for me was like, huh, that's what I've been feeling all this time, and I couldn't even put a word to it, you know? It's definitely a part of me that died, but of course you're not even allowed to say that, you know? I remember maybe it was 3 months in, and Pia had a bit of colics, and you're tired, and you're breastfeeding, and you don't have a clue what you're doing, and you're doing your best. And I sat down with my mom, I was like, Mom, I wish I didn't have her sometimes. But I love her so much. And, you know, I heard myself saying those words out loud, and I started crying instantly, because you're not supposed to say those things. You're not supposed to feel those things. You're not supposed to say, I don't want to have a baby, I wish she didn't exist. You know, you're not supposed to say that, but guess what? That's how you feel. And it's not always, it's not all the time, but it happens. And it is okay. It is okay to acknowledge that that's, you know, a feeling that you have at that moment in time, because you're tired, because you don't know, because it's overwhelming, because it's a lot. It's a big change. And it's okay to kind of feel that, you know, as long as you don't go down that route and throw your baby out of the window, of course. But the only way to actually avoid those kind of situations that do happen, and these barbarities that the world sees, is to be able to feel what you feel and listen to that. So you know, when my friend Elena said that to me and expressed it in those words, it was really eye-opening. It was like, aha. It was really helpful to be able to put words to what I had been feeling for the first year of motherhood. So yeah, I guess that's the first step for the first feeling, you know, that a challenge that you're not really supposed to talk about. Or I've seen other friends going through postnatal depression or struggling with other things that you're not supposed to talk about because you're a mum now. So you're, you know, well, guess what? We'll go through it. And yeah, it's part of it.
Yeah, I really appreciate your honesty there, because I think there's so many women that could resonate with that. And I have spoken to others as well. And I think, you know, a couple of years ago, there was a few Medium articles about it, that it's such a taboo topic, you know, it's life. And those are the realities. But I think it's so important to openly talk about it, to avoid, because, you know, postnatal depression, but also like those feelings that you have, it's all mental health topics that need to be addressed and talked about more.
Yeah, and if you don't tend to them, like the first time, I remember I was sitting on the sofa and Pia was like on the side, kind of just fell asleep, and I was destroyed. And I said that to my mom, and I was like, I wish I wouldn't had her. And she, the fear on my mom's face, it was just, as soon as I said it, I regretted it. I was like, I should have never said that. You know, I should have never, especially never said that to my mother, because she kind of just flipped, and the concern in her eyes, and, you know, she thought I'd just go crazy or something. And it took me for weeks to, because she kept going back to that question. Like, she kept coming back to me. It's like, how do you feel about this? I was like, no, Mom, you have to understand that I needed to get that off my chest. At that moment, you know, it didn't really help me, because I told her and I thought I could tell her everything, and I can, and I could, but I guess she wasn't ready for it. And what that did was kind of repress that feeling in me a little bit more, when what I actually needed was to talk about it and be like, yes, it's hard, but it's okay. We'll pull through this. Everything passes, blah, 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 you know. And at that moment, like, I feel like I had to restrain myself from sharing that. And that made it harder at that time, until I could then start to speak about it more openly and a bit more objectively. But to reach that moment, you definitely have to share these thoughts, because otherwise, yeah, it just spirals and it gets worse.
So on the flip side of that, like, what are the main things that you absolutely love about your life now to, you know, when we first met?
I feel so much stronger. I feel so much stronger as a person, and I cry more than I've ever cried before. I lose my shit more than I ever lost it before. Yet I feel stronger, I feel more grounded, and I feel that, yeah, if I've gone through this, and, you know, like an international divorce in the middle of a pandemic, and bringing my daughter by myself, and securing, you know, I bought a house on my own with no buffer when the shit hit the fan, and had to support my family for almost 2 years, all by myself, when in the past 10 years, all I had was my van. And I've never had security whatsoever. I don't even know what that means. I still don't have it. And it's still, you know, kind of the same style of person and leaving and handling my shit. But I feel stronger. I feel like I can do it. And if I ever doubt about it, it's like, well, I have to. There's no other way around it. I have to, period. That's it. And I'll do whatever it takes. So, yeah, that's, I guess, what I love. Which means it's not always easy, but eventually it gets better. Yeah. So
I think that's basically the crux of She Dares and what we try and advocate is that, you know, just things are hard, but you'll only get stronger by doing things, by just moving forward. So everything that you've mentioned, you know, you've gone through a lot and yet you feel more grounded because you've done it and you have to carry on. Is there kind of one piece of advice that you'd like to leave us with today?
I think being gentle to ourselves and remember that we're always doing the best we can, always. Like, we wouldn't do anything but the best we can and the best we know. So there's no point in getting angry or frustrated. Yeah, we'll get angry and frustrated and sad, but keep reminding ourselves, I'm doing the best I can. We're all doing the best we can. And that's exciting, you know. And from motherhood, this one thing I wanted to say is, like, for me, I see myself doing a lot of things differently or absolutely the contrary what my mother used to do with me. Like, you know, the feeding, the learning, like a lot of things I do complete opposite. And a lot of them, I had to fight, actually, my mom, because she was helping me at the beginning. Like, no, I want her to eat herself, or I wanted her to do that way. And I had to fight her off it, because that's what I believed, and that's the ground I stood for. And when I see my own relationship with my mother, she's my best friend. And yet, you know, there's a lot of things I disagree, and a lot of things that make me really annoyed, and I want to kind of punch her in the face. But then... yeah, it's that strong. But then also I think she's the best mother in the world, you know? So my only hope is that Pia will think one day, despite that we argue and she does things differently to what I've done with her, that she, at the end of the day, thinks I'm the best mother in the world too, you know? And that's just to help us remind ourselves that we're doing the best we can.
Okay, so as you know, every single interviewee gets to give me a dare who comes on the podcast. Have you thought of one?
Yeah.
Should I be terrified?
I think. No, well, the first idea was like, hey, do you want to babysit Pia every week? But I'm gonna be good to you. Not because I'm worried for her, but more that I'm worried for you.
I would be worried for her. And I did think that you might do something around, yeah, that.
Yeah, okay. No, but I think, didn't you hold her on your arms, like we're in Budapest or something, that she was like 4 months old and your face was absolute fear. So I was like, okay, for male sanity, let's do something else. The one thing I've been through the last few years has been carrying a lot of weight in my back, quite literally. Taking the camera, like being a photographer and following, you know, the best snowboarders in the world, I carry big, heavy backpacks around the mountain and whatnot. And I thought I was strong, you know, that would be a good preparation and to be strong enough to carry Pia around. But it's proved tricky sometimes, you know, like last winter, she was 22 kilos and I would snowboard with her in my back when she was still too young to snowboard by herself, or she would snowboard a little bit by herself and then I would carry her on tow. So yeah, that's definitely a test on your strength, physical strength, but also emotional or mental strength, because you get tired faster, because you're not as good, because the movements aren't as flowy, you know, everything kind of gets tricky. So I don't know if you'd be keen on experiencing that, you know, having a backpack that you can load, maybe not to 22 kilos, but, you know, a load that you can safely ride with and ride a whole day with a big, heavy backpack and see how that feels. And if on top of that, you can think of like, oh, this is a live being that I have to kind of be careful not to knock on a tree or, you know, throw or kind of be set, like kind of be conscious that you have a heavy backpack that lives and breathes. And see how you feel about it. I don't know. Is that a good dare?
Yeah, sure. Do you know what I'll do? I'll get some kind of doll or something, put it in the backpack, but then fill it with rocks so that I'm aware that I'm attempting to carry a child, you know?
There's a lot of things that go into play and, you know, that's part of it.
Great. All right. Thank you so much, Albert. It's been awesome. Thank you for being on the show. Where can people find you online and where can people find more about Women in Action Sports Network?
Right, so me personally, albapardo.com is a good place to start. On Instagram, I'm albapardot. Yeah, I think that's mainly the places you can find me. Also, for Women in Action Sports Network is Women in Action Sports Network on Instagram, womeninactionsportsnetwork.com in the website, and Women in Action Sports Network on Facebook as well. We have a page and then we have a members group, so...
And they can find out about the membership there and sign up?
Yes, they can sign up on the website or they can always email me at alba@womeninactionsportsnetwork.com.
Great. Awesome. Thank you so much. And I think I'll be seeing you next week, right?
Yes, we go shredding. Woo-hoo! Don't bring your backpack there.
I might.
I'm PLS then, so let's just enjoy.
So my dare from Albert was to snowboard all day with a heavy backpack on my back, just trying to figure out what I can use to fill the backpack with. So I'm just about to go out and take on Albert's dare, and I've gone down the road to try and find some big rocks, and there's not really any big rocks, there's some pebbles. But I don't really want to fill my bag up with gravel. I mean, it's all pretty small gravel stuff. I'll have to rethink that. Okay, so I've got my Avi stuff here, Avi safety stuff. I don't need it today, but it's heavy. And I've got some big books going in. I mean, it's a pretty small bag. I think that's all I can fit, but... I'll tell you what, I'll weigh it at home. See how it is. Oh, yeah, okay, that's pretty heavy. So I've literally just got in the car after riding all day with that backpack, and wow, my hips and my back, my neck and my shoulders are really aching, and I don't even know if I've managed to fill the bag with as much weight as you have, but I guess that's kind of, you know, the point. I'm just pushing myself out of my comfort zone. I don't need to compare and match to your specific weight. But yeah, I mean, kudos to you because, you know, you're carrying Pia and also all the camera equipment. And I wasn't really riding that hard today. It was just pieced, but I definitely feel it. So I'm kind of keen to see how much it weighed.
So here we go. 6.7 kilos. Wow, that's not very much.
Oh my god, I can't believe it's only 6.7 kilos. I think Alva was saying that Pia weighed like 20 kilos or something, 22. Okay, I mean, you know, I did my best, and I'm aching, so maybe I can just next time put on a heavier backpack and build up, because of course I don't want to just completely kill myself. But kudos to you, Albert, that was amazing and definitely harder than I thought, because I really did feel it. Yeah, you must have a back and legs of steel. If you want to check out how the dare went down, there's a reel on Instagram for every single one of them. Follow us at _shedares and let me know if you decide to do any of them with me. I'd love to see what you get up to.